in the middle of the fast.
Here, the guy's on the 13th day of his fast, I believe, and you have to literally support him so he can get to court. You must have strong memories of that day.
I do have strong memories of that day. and they don't relate just to Caesar. The setting, as I recall, was that about a third of the way through Caesar's fast, he was hailed into court in Bakersfield, which is 30 miles away from Delano. And the growers' attorneys had filed an injunction with the court accusing Caesar Chavez and his farm worker union of fomenting violence. And he was ordered to appear in front of the judge to answer these charges so that the judge could determine whether an injunction should be sustained against Caesar himself and his farm worker union. Now, these are bogus charges, but in Kern County in 1968, it was the growers and their attorneys who controlled the judicial system. The cards were stacked against poor people in general, and certainly farm workers who even had less rights and less abilities to defend themselves than even poor people. So we had to take Caesar to the Kern County Courthouse, and he had to appear in front of the judge. Well, Caesar was weakened by fasting, and his health was not good. He wasn't very strong, but he had to go. So we got the idea of transforming the Kern County Courthouse into a religious cathedral. And we went out and organized farm workers, powerless people, right? People without power, to go to the courthouse early the morning of that day and to fill up all five floors of the courthouse and line the corridors. So before Caesar arrived at the courthouse was occupied by farm workers, silent, quiet. Many were praying. Some were saying the rosary. It transformed this judicial system, which was stacked against poor people, into something else. So Jerry Cohen, who is the general counsel for the Farm Workers Union, took Caesar into the courtroom, went to the judge. The judge invited them to the back room because the grower's attorney said that the hearing could not go forward until the judge cleared the courthouse. Everyone had to leave. Now, this judge was no friend of the farm workers, but he said, listen, if I have to clear this courthouse with all these thousands of people before we can have a hearing, they're going to say that this is just another example of gringo justice. And he said, I can't be part of that. So this hearing is going to go forward. Well, the growers' attorneys said, well, we want a postponement. Mr. Chavez is not feeling well. He's not very strong. He doesn't look very well. And so it would be better in the interests of justice if we postpone the hearing. And the judge said, fine. And he did. And when Caesar walked out down the corridors, people knelt. This holy man was passing. And he made his way through all the corridors so that, in effect, he could thank the farm workers for their support. He did say a word, didn't have to say a word, just made his way, being supported by those of us who were walking with him. And then came down. There were several hundred workers kneeling in front of the courthouse by the time we got down there. And then came on back to Delano to continue his fast until the 25th day, when Senator Robert Kennedy came from New York to be part of Caesar breaking his fast. And, of course, that was a glorious day, and more than 10,000 farm workers came to participate in that event. So it's just another example of the quiet power, the quiet organizing power, the power of example that a man like Cesar Chavez had over the lives of many of us, thousands of us, people all across this country. And to this day, 40 years later, he's a man revered and a man that holds a very special place in the history of this country. And will continue to.
I'm thinking about that photograph, and it's obviously a bunch of different things are happening at the same time, because nobody's smiling in that photograph. It's not like we won. You're very, very concerned. Jerry's grim. Caesar's practically unconscious. It's a tough moment, isn't it?
It's a very difficult moment, but I think part of it, I think most of it is because of our concern for the health of Caesar. I mean, Caesar was our leader. He was everyone's leader, of course, I mean, in terms of the farm workers. And to see him suffering as he was, to see him in a weakened condition and yet determined to do what was required, he was responding to the court's order to show up. He did that. He needed help to do that. It was not a victorious moment in the sense that, well, we won and they lost. The truth of the matter, we were all losing. The growers were losing. We were losing. It was a sad time. We didn't know whether Caesar was going to fast until he died. I'm not sure that he knew how long he could. Well, I know he didn't know how long he could fast. He had no idea how long he could fast. He was under doctor's care. They were urging him not to fast. They said it would ruin his health, and therefore he wouldn't be good to anyone. Well, those aren't happy moments. Those are serious, somber, important moments of history that a leader has to make a decision about how far he or she should go. These were serious. Look, the farm worker strike and struggle in Delano was literally a matter of life and death, and that is how we approached it. These striking farm workers, at Caesar's request, left everything. They had nothing. They were completely dependent on the union, as small as it was, for the food they ate. They had no money. The union had no money to give them. There were no strike benefits. So these people had sacrificed everything for the sake of Caesar's vision and his call for justice. And they were responding to that. So what would happen to them if we had to abandon that? Or Caesar had to say, well, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. We can't win. We can't do it. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to do this. I shouldn't have asked you to come out on strike. Well, that wasn't a viable option. And so every day, every week, every month, every year, we had to pursue victory. We had to win. And when we had defeats, and we had many defeats, we always found the seeds in the defeat of the next victory. Always. It was a si se puede attitude. Yes, it can be done. And that was the spirit in which we organized. Yes, it can be done.
So, for example, the mood at the end of the fast, now, just apart from Kennedy coming and what that represented, it was also that Caesar had survived, that it was over, that the ordeal was over, right?
Well, that was a happy day. It was a happy day for several reasons. First of all, Caesar had survived. Caesar broke his fast. His health had held. He was going to need to recuperate, and he did. He had to go to, we took him to Santa Barbara so he could have a week or two of recuperation. But he had to be very careful how he came back onto food. He just couldn't eat normally again. He had to work up to it. That was a significant victory, that Caesar had accomplished this. And you have to remember, 10,000 people coming to a Catholic mass that Caesar's attending, where he's going to break his fast, and Senator Robert Kennedy from New York is there. Think about it. When is the last time a U.S. senator of the stature of the Kennedy family came anywhere in this country for poor people? I mean, it was such a morale booster that if the Kennedy family came all this way to show their support for our leader, Cesar Chavez, well, we have something going. We're important. I mean, we mean something to someone that's much bigger than ourselves. Now, the other thing that happened on that day was that, in effect, Robert Kennedy crawled onto the top of a car, I think it was Jim Drake's car, and stood on the rooftop and basically announced that he was running for president of the United States. Now, to be there and to be a witness to that and to be present, how honored can a person be? I mean, I consider myself most fortunate. Now, I also was there on the night that he was assassinated at the Ambassador Hotel. And because we had worked hard in his campaign in East Los Angeles, and he had swept all the precincts of East Los Angeles. And yet he was killed, assassinated. So those were life and death days.
But that was something that keeps you going, right? I mean, what do you do the day after someone like Kennedy dies? How do you say, well, that's a setback, but we're going to go on?
Very difficult. And all you can do is rely on your leader. And the next morning, as sad as Caesar was, he picked himself up and gathered us together, and we made the plans for, first of all, to attend. Cesar Chavez was selected to be one of the honorary pallbearers by the Kennedy family, so we had to fly to New York and be part of that funeral ceremony. And of course, we organized a series of memorials with farm workers and in farm worker communities for Senator Kennedy, which was not difficult to do because he was so beloved by farm workers.
Do you think it was just because he was Roman Catholic?
No, I think no. It's more. Oh no, it's far more than the fact that he was Roman Catholic. It was because he was willing to identify publicly himself and the Kennedy family with the cause of the farm workers, and this was so meaningful to them. It was so important to them. It put them on the map, if you know what I mean. It showed great respect for farm workers and the rights of farm workers and their struggle. And they responded to that. I mean, they felt honored and they wanted to be part of, they wanted to do their part to show their support, their respect, their love for Senator Kennedy. I'll tell you, it was a very sad and depressive time to be in Delano after the assassination of Kennedy. And it took everything that Caesar had to bring people out of a potential funk, and so that they were paralyzed. He wouldn't allow that to happen. He didn't allow it to happen, even though he himself personally was grieving. His wife told me that he
hold on to that button.
Again, the comment from Helen.
Caesar was grieving to such an extent about the death of Senator Kennedy that Helen, Caesar's wife, told me that he came awake in the middle of the night sobbing. He told her, I can't believe that they did this. I can't believe it happened. It doesn't seem possible. And what he meant was that a person of such importance in this country, who had taken up the cause and taken up the mantle of farm workers, was now dead. And not only dead, but he'd been killed. He'd been assassinated. I mean, it was almost too much for Caesar to accept. But he did. He had to. For the sake of all of us and the sake of the movement, he just had to pull it together, and we went forward and did bigger and better things. But it was difficult.
And you said that, you know, that even though Kennedy was dead, that the effect of working on the Kennedy campaign, that publicity and celebrity, that then when Caesar went out on the road, there was some sort of connection and people were really more responsive to him.
Well, there is no question that Caesar became a national, international celebrity. It didn't happen, of course, overnight. It happened, started certainly with the strike in 1965, the march to Sacramento, in 1966 with the result of the first contract with Schenley because of the march to Sacramento. The FAST was definitely a turning point in terms of national attention. You know, in this day and age, how invasive the media can be and is, the paparazzi and TV cameras following you everywhere. And when Caesar went to the 40 acres to fast, I was in charge of the 40 acres, and I was in charge of the fast and the circumstances surrounding the fast and the events surrounding the fast. And I said that Caesar would give no interviews and that no photographs would be permitted and no TV pictures would be permitted while he was fasting. Now, the press, when they found out he was fasting, came from all over the country. I'm talking about people like Tom Brokaw. He was a young reporter then, out of Los Angeles. Well, they wanted to interview Caesar. They wanted him on camera. I said no. And you know what? They respected that. Now, I'd never get away with that in this day and age. Never. They'd laugh at my face. But they didn't laugh in my face. This was 1968. They did respect what Caesar stood for and what the ground rules were, and they understood the ground rules, that he was not doing it for publicity. He was doing it for personal reasons. It had a purpose. It was an example for the movement. He was making a personal statement. It was important that that be respected. Now, that doesn't mean that they didn't want their photos and their interviews, but they didn't get them. He gave no interviews. And during that 25-day period. Well, of course, that message, that fast, went across the country on the AP and the UP wires, and I mean, it went everywhere. So Caesar became a celebrity, and certainly with Kennedy coming to help him break the fast and be with him, that even ratcheted up again. So when Caesar went out to support the boycott, So when Caesar went out on the boycott, and he did regularly once or twice a year, when I say went out on the boycott, he went out to visit the boycott centers in the cities, and they used his presence, because he was a celebrity, they used his presence to have rallies for picket lines, fundraising events, and he gave speeches where 2,000-3,000 people would come to hear him speak. Imagine this soft-spoken person who did not have rhetorical skills, was not a preacher or a clever speaker in any way, shape, or form. And these people sitting in their chairs in rapt attention at every word he said. Well, and what he was saying was, we need your support. We need your help. Please don't buy these grapes. It's your support that is going to make a difference. And on and on. So the fact that he became a celebrity was so important. Just, it was another piece of ammunition in the boycott arsenal. And it was very, very helpful.
Let's talk a little bit about the great boycott coming to an end and the growers finally cracking, and what that means to the striking farm workers who have been out in cities across the country. What is that moment like when everyone realized it worked?
Well, I was the director of the boycott when the growers threw in the towel and announced that they would sign union contracts, recognize the union and sign union contracts. I was the director of the Los Angeles boycott. And when I got the message that I was supposed to come and bring the staff to the 40 acres for the signing of contracts, I could not believe it. I mean, I knew it was true because they wouldn't be playing a hoax, or they wouldn't be suckering me into something. It wasn't a joke. I knew it was true, but I had been walking uphill for so long. I didn't think that we were at the top. I couldn't imagine how we would ever be at the top anyway. So I went, of course I went, and I took the staff, and we sat there, and we couldn't believe it. It was a victory. It was a victory celebration. Don't misunderstand me. People were excited. People were happy. This is the first time in the history of this country where a farm worker union had been built. California agribusiness is the largest industry in the state of California. This is a huge win. It's a huge step for farm workers. But it didn't seem believable. Now, within 24 hours after the table grape contracts were signed, we were called to Salinas Valley because the Teamsters Union had signed sweetheart contract deals with some of the growers in Salinas, the lettuce growers. And so we won one day, and the next day we were in a fight not only with the growers of Salinas Valley, but with the Teamsters Union, if you can believe that. Having to fight another union because they were willing to make a sweetheart deal with employers. It's incredible, really. But it was just another stumbling block for farm workers and the farm worker movement. Caesar didn't skip a beat, didn't take a day off. We just went to Salinas. We started all over again.
But let's stay with the contract signing for a minute in terms of it as a symbolic event. What does it represent to ordinary people, the people who aren't educated, who barely speak English, can't read and write, to know that they can win something like that? How important is it?
When you don't believe you can win, but you stick with it and you struggle and you carry on because you have a leader like Cesar Chavez who teaches you, who shows you how, encourages you, is willing to do it himself. And then you do win. In this case, the union contracts with the table growers, table grape growers. When the next hurdle comes along, you're empowered. You feel that we did it once, we can do it again. And this time we'll do it better. This time we'll do it faster. This time we'll be better organized. We won't make the same mistakes as we did the first time. And so you develop confidence. You develop self-esteem. This is one of the things that self-esteem is a trait that immigrant people generally, certainly in the case of Mexican-American farm workers or Mexican farm workers in this case, and Mexican-American too, their self-esteem was below zero. They had no power. No one cared about them. They were on their own. They struggled to feed their families. It was a very difficult life. So if your self-esteem rises and you feel better about yourself and you feel good about yourself and you feel more confident about yourself, there's no end to what you can accomplish if you're organized. And that's how Caesar went about doing it, teaching people to take pride in the fact that they were struggling and that they were willing to suffer for something bigger and better. It's because of Cesar Chavez, frankly, that a whole generation of Hispanics was able to rise up and elbow their way into the mainstream of this country. And without Cesar Chavez and the farm workers, maybe they would have eventually accomplish that. But that is one of his legacies that is the most important in the history of this country, I believe, was people, Latinos, Hispanics in the urban areas, looking at the farm workers saying, my goodness, if they can do this, if they can go up against such odds, if they can overcome, well, we can too. I can too. And you know what? They did. Look around 40 years later. Attorneys, doctors, mayors, politicians, national leaders, entrepreneurs. My goodness. My analysis is that you can trace it back to the work of one person, ultimately. That person being Cesar Chavez.
But that person is the catalyst, right?
Catalyst.
He didn't do it all.
No.